C1P. Number 6B.
We come to the dawn of truth. Truth knowing, as the epitome, affirms the consciousness of man's dominion. So what we get here now is that main accent on the sixth day of creation, man having dominion over the world, over the earth. And so we can ask ourselves, in which way does truth have dominion? And so we can say, what truth is mind, and truth is spirit, and truth is soul, and principle, life, truth, and love, and they all have a specific kind of dominion. Therefore, if I want to really see the bigness of a statement like truth having dominion, I have to see that as reflecting those seven synonymous terms, and so I come to the subtones. Therefore, Mrs. Eddy first considers that dominion of truth from the point of view of mind, as mind. My epitome reads like this: exercising the power of truth over error, that's the dominion of truth, involves what? Now you get mind, the might of intelligence over mortal beliefs. So the dominion of mind is that intelligence has dominion over its opposite, over ignorance or mortal beliefs. That's what she wants to bring out here. How does she reason here? She says, first she gives really the proposition and says, without the human mind, there is no disease. Again, she goes out from that very point. Disease has to do, is a mental case. Never anything else but the mental case. It's the human mind, and only with the human mind there is disease. Therefore, remove the error in that human mind, and you remove the effect, and you remove the effect. So that's the general sense that underlies really this chapter. But then you can ask, how? How do you remove the error? And she says, now gives the method. The might of intelligence exercised over mortal beliefs destroys them, destroys those beliefs. Can you see now she chose which kind of dominion we have to have? If disease comes from mortal beliefs, and mortal beliefs is ignorance, then you better handle that ignorance, that mortal beliefs, through the intelligence of the divine mind, so that mortal beliefs have no more any say in it. She also gives an indication that we could use a false method instead of using the intelligence of divine mind. Many people therefore use another method, namely hypnotism and hygienic drilling and drugging. And she says, but that cannot be a real help. Why not? Because they rely on two bases instead of one basis, namely mind. Therefore she explains why another method of exchanging the beliefs, except through divine mind, cannot really work, because any other method of exchanging a belief, like hypnotism and drugging and so on, is always a method that relies on two bases, matter and mind, small m, whereas we rely on only one basis, the divine mind. That's very simple, isn't it? Yes. So we have the dominion when we go back to the intelligence of the divine mind and control or dominate really the mortal beliefs and correct the mortal beliefs with the intelligence of the one mind, that one mind which always says, I only know myself as ideas, I only produce ideas, I only bring forth ideas, and therefore only ideas of health are actual. He goes to the next subject, the spirit. Again, we would have to see what kind of dominion does she bring out here. My epitome reads like this: disease and matter are not endowed with power. See, they have no dominion, they have no dominating power. You know, disease and matter, the counterfeit of spirit, have no power, and consequently cannot dispute the empire of mind. So now she brings up the belief that matter or disease can dominate the situation. And you know how true that seems to be in the human, that it seems that the disease just has the dominion over the body and over people, and seem to govern the case and seem to have really the mastery over the case and define the course of what should happen. So that one feels that matter that is so unintelligent has a great dominating activity. Therefore, she takes away that belief and says that sickness is not a self-constituted material power. See, first we have the belief that disease and matter has power. So in order to correct that, she first has to say, look here, matter has actually no self-constituted power. There is no innate power, so to say, in matter or disease. Why not? Why not? And then she gives the reason. Because it is not God-given. She always goes back to the right cause, the right origin. It is not God-given. Therefore, it has no intelligence. It cannot, therefore, dispute the empire of mind. It, therefore, cannot dethrone mind. It cannot take, therefore, the government into its own hands, and therefore cannot conquer mind. Can you see, she just reasons out and says, because matter is not of God, it cannot have a power that is big enough to control man and mind. Because matter is a self-constituted power, a belief that matter has power, has to be disproved through that great reasoning, because matter does not come from God, it cannot have dominion over God, it cannot have dominion over mind. Consequently, she says, God never endowed matter with power to produce discord. This is the point. She says, a power without the divine permission is inconceivable. Again, reinforcing the same thing, that there is no power without the power of God. Yes. So she goes on to soul. My epitome here is, when we rise above false beliefs. Can you hear soul? Rise above. Always soul says, I'm superior, rise above it. Rising above false beliefs, mind, capital M, mind controls the body. Here you have the dominion of soul, the control of mind over the body. That's another kind of dominion. See, in the subtone of mind we had the dominion of mind as intelligence. In the subtone of spirit we saw that matter can have no dominion, therefore spirit must have dominion. Here at the point of soul, she shows that therefore mind has dominion over the body, is superior over the body. She talks quite a while about this mind over the body, because she gives to that subject more importance and accentuates more, because this is really the piece of healing, that mind can control the body. So she has to reason it out again a bit at length to make it very clear. I think it's quite a nice way of reasoning, and I try to follow that reasoning in a short way. You see, she says, now, sin and disease, she says, cannot control. They have no dominion. So she starts out from the wrong sense of dominion, says, sin and disease cannot control the body, except if we give the consent to it. So it says, actually, when we humanly give the consent, then it is really so that disease can control the body. And that's what actually happens, that disease has more power than the body. But she wants to say, look here, this is only so as long as mortals give the consent to it, else it wouldn't have. So again, bringing it back to the human mind, and says, I can show you that very easily with a very well-known example, and gives that example of those Oxford students who experimented with a felon. And you remember how Mrs. Eddy says they made the felon believe that he is bleeding to death, and he was so afraid that this is true that he actually died. And so she wants to prove and say, you can see, it is actually mortal's consent that disease is governing your life that made that felon die. It wasn't that he was actually bleeding to death. He didn't lose a drop of blood. But his belief that he is under the control of disease just wiped him off. So, having given this example, he said it was actually therefore the belief that blood destroys life that made him die. It wasn't the blood itself that brought about death. He should have risen above the false beliefs. Can you see now? So, he should have risen above false beliefs, and then he would not have been submitted to the false beliefs. Her conclusion, therefore, is in the positive, says the real jurisdiction of the world is therefore in mind. Doing what? Controlling every effect. Can you hear soul? Soul's control. Mind controlling every effect, and recognizing all causation as vested in the divine mind, not cause vested in mortal beliefs, as in that case of the felon. She goes on and says, and now I'm going to explain you what happens when this belief in the reality of disease is controlling your body. I show you what happens. So she says, you see, it's mortal mind that first draws its picture on the body. It's mentality, mortal mind, that first draws a picture on the body. And so she says, the images held in the disturbed thought is that which frightens then conscious thought, and that frightened conscious thought is imaged forth on the body. So he really shows how we create disease, how we through beliefs and fear create the disease, and then not only create the disease, but we also have it imaged forth on our body. That's one explanation, but that could be taken as an individual belief. And so she explains the very same thing once over, but as a universal belief. She says, images drawn by millions of mortals, like fever, because the whole mankind believes in fever, that images drawn by millions of mortals, they do rest at length on some receptive thought. See, somewhere there is a thought that is receptive for it, that is afraid of it, that constantly is afraid that my child could get fever, that there is a fever case. And so it becomes a fever case. Why has it become a fever case? Because millions of mortals believe in that universal belief that there can be fever. And so it ends in a belief called death. You see how she reasons here? She reasons here no more as showing that disease or death is an individual belief. He says it can also be a universal belief that there is in the universe a universal belief like fever, fear of fever. And finally, that whole universal mentality somehow is picked up here or there by receptive thought, by a receptive mortal thought, by a frightened thought, by someone that is not secure within himself, not strong within himself, and therefore picks it up, and it ends into a fever case, and the fever case again does what? Shows and images forth the picture that fever can end in death, and if the fever rises and rises, there is no more hope, then the patient will die. So finally it ends in the individual death. So you can see that the individual death here she depicts as having the origin not in an individual belief but in a universal belief which the individual can pick up. And therefore we must see really, you see, that the whole world of mentality that has been built up, an atmosphere over perhaps hundreds of thousands of years, and has built up beliefs of danger, fear of the future, hate and jealousy and revenge, and I don't know what's going on in the mental atmosphere of mankind, hate, all that goes on. These are universal beliefs, and we all live in that atmosphere of those universal and collective beliefs. And if we are not careful and do not watch continually our thought, we pick up unconsciously one of these mental atmospheres, and be it a collective belief or, say, an archetypal belief, which psychology has brought forth and has shown that there are hundreds of archetypal beliefs under which we suffer, and that we pick them up. We pick up ancestral beliefs, we pick up racial beliefs, we pick up religious beliefs, we pick up all kind of class distinction beliefs, national beliefs, all kinds of beliefs we pick up. And therefore we say, we can see that the moment we pick them up and are not aware that we have picked them up, they begin to work in it, within us as a belief, and throw forth its images on our body or on our life. And therefore here we have a sense that we must watch. It says therefore, all these beliefs must be conquered by science. See, not by an individual disbelief. And that's usually what many students do, that they say to all these collective beliefs, oh, this is all rubbish, this is all nonsense, I don't believe in the influence of the stars, I don't believe in hereditary beliefs, I don't believe in racial beliefs, I don't believe in traditional beliefs, I don't believe in all that kind of stuff. This is just nonsense, and wipes it off as an individual protest, and then suddenly you see that they come under this belief. Why? Because the majority of belief rule the minority of beliefs. And her remedy is that only one thing can really correct a collective or a universal belief, and that is science. Because science is in the majority. One with God is a majority. Therefore, just by an individual dissent, can you say that? If you individual, is that all right? Dissent? By an individual dissent, just by individually, just throw it off, and throw it off perhaps lightly, just by saying, oh, nonsense, huh? That is not correcting a universal belief. We have to correct it with something very, very big, namely with the dominion. We are here at the point of truth dominion as soul, by seeing the dominion really of science over these universal beliefs. We have to be quite awake to the one thing that only mind's ideas are at work and nothing else. Therefore, she says, these universal beliefs must be conquered by science. Then truth will be always the victor. We have here the dominion of truth. And then sickness and sin will fall by their own weight. Yeah. So she sums it up, that whole tone of soul, and says, contending for the evidence of sin, sickness, and death, we actually contend against the control of mind over the body. See, the subject in soul is mind over the body. So if we contend with the evidence of sin, sickness, and death, we actually contend against the control of mind over the body, and therefore we deny, really, the power of mind to heal. Yes. Isn't it a terrific way how Mrs. Eddy explains here the sense of mind controlling the body, having dominion over the body, the higher governing the lower, and showing what is the higher? The higher is not an individual dissent. The higher is when you reason in science, when you understand science. Only science is bigger than a cosmic belief, than a universal belief, than a collective belief. Nothing else is bigger. Well, all these things I have tried to bring out in my book, Introduction into the Science of Christian Science. I've made quite a point out of this, because one always sees that these are still the points that the student never really understands properly. That the student of Christian Science, I don't know why on earth, he always feels that if he individually doesn't believe in something, that he's free from that belief. Actually, he isn't. He isn't. Just that this belief in a belief doesn't make him free from a belief. Not at all. And certainly not of the subconscious beliefs, certainly not of the unconscious belief, certainly not of the universal and collective belief. For that he has to know science. And therefore, look up what I have written there over many, many pages on this subject in my latest book as the Introduction into the Science of Christian Science. This should be really things that every student that comes to my talk should know, backward and forward and inside and out, so that one should actually never have to explain it again. But unfortunately enough, I have to see that every time, every year I come back, I have to explain it again. Why? Why do you want to be sick? Why do you want to be sick? You want to be sick if you don't want to study these facts. If you don't want to investigate that the disbelief in the belief does not protect you. If you don't want to study that and don't want to see the answer of it, you ask for trouble. That's why so many people are constantly in trouble. You will never be in trouble constantly if you start reasoning in science and control a situation through science instead of just disbelief in a belief. Disbelief in a belief isn't worth much. Not at all. I think it's even worse than to believe in the belief. If we believe in the belief, we really know why we get into trouble. But if we disbelieve in the belief and get into trouble because of that, we are always faced with a great question mark. Why did that happen to me? Why did it happen to me? Well, science is impersonal. And a belief is impersonal. It just hits wherever it finds a receptive consciousness. So that's the point of soul, truth as soul.